up?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Oh, man.
How are things in Texas?
In the slums of Texas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Is virtue. My good man.
Oh, yes. It's another epidose, I guess, of the Gonzo guys.
Yeah,
it's still plural. So
it's still plural, which is good. One of our esteemed colleagues is on assignment for an extended period of time.
Yeah, what was this assignment again? Did he actually get deeper into the scam?
I think what happened was he was pursuing some, toying with some scam artists, and I'm not sure if this. The scam turned out to not be a scam, and he's wealthy beyond his wildest dreams and living in a island nation, or if perhaps he crossed the line, but...
Well, as long as he's using that to help out good Christian brothers as well, then I'm good okay with that.
I think he is helping out good Christian brothers, and, you know, hopefully we'll make contact with him at some point in the future, but...
he'll flip us a couple of hundies here and there. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, especially if that amount came through that he was discussing in the previous epidoses, I think he could slip us a cool mill each.
So I guess those aren't scams anymore. That's actual real life.
Case in point.
Yeah, and so we're going to continue on and deal with another real life fun time. By talking about really old movies. Or movies that, like, pique our interest. We'll probably bounce on some other topics, too. Like, I wouldn't mind revisiting some sports. We're not recording on our usual time slot, so we're not cursing out the Chiefs today. So that's probably a good thing.
No, it's best that we have a cool-down period on that.
Well, because the fans are terrible. Anyway, But the one tradition that is staying strong is that I'm enjoying a delicious Austin Amber from the Independence Brewing Company out of Austin, Texas, because, I moved down here and I went full Texan, so I don't have the drawl yet. I do have a hat, but I do not have the boots and the spurs in my saddle.
That's next week.
Yeah, well, actually, I will be back in the Midwest next weekend for an engagement involving bachelors.
I see.
But no women, so I don't know how I'm going to fare. But we can get into that, too, because, that's another topic.
Fine art of the bachelor gathering.
Yes, and usually, like, a good, like, bachelor parties, and that's what I'm doing. Surprise!
No!
They would have a ladies of the night at the really good ones. And I haven't been to any of the good ones, so the chances of that, especially this weekend, are destroyed. But that's where it brings us a little bit to this week's movie, Oh Choice. Tim, actually it's two, now that I think about it. It's two.
Technically two. We may focus on one a little
so,
bit more.
So what movies did we watch or have we watched? Mm-hmm.
We had a little combo feature or point of topic as one being Dr. Detroit, the other being Trading Places.
So I'm familiar with both, but I don't think you are familiar with Dr. Detroit. Everyone knows Trading Places. It's that Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd movie about Wall Street and the 99% somehow in the 80s with Statler and Waldorf. But the... The other movie, Dr. Detroit, what's that about?
Dr. Detroit is it's an odd film. It's kind of funny. It is about a young professor at a college that apparently is having some money struggles. Quite appropriate for this day and time.
They're both very timely movies. They were made about 30 years ago.
And it actually, they both are fairly timely. But this young professor, his dad is the dean of the campus, and he's kind of a literary snoot and seemingly nice guy. And he ends up getting mixed up with Howard Hessman, who's a highfalutin and probably one of the nicer pimps that's been portrayed in the movie.
Well, he cut and run pretty quick, but
he wasn't. He didn't seem to be roughing up his ladies or anything.
No, hell no.
that end. And he had a very, very dedicated small group of women that worked for him. And he basically, for some reason or another, the leading pimp in the city of Chicago is a woman in her 50s called Mom.
Yeah. So that's kind of the two movies, right? Let's get the one that we know, because it's going to set up Dr. Detroit, because that's a more interesting one, because there's a lot of crazy shit that happens in that. But Trading Places, it came out in 1983, that stars Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. Basically, Eddie Murphy is a street guy. Dan Aykroyd is the Wall Street guy, and two guys that look like Statler and Waldorf from The Muppet Show make a bet that they couldn't turn one guy's life around into good and then shit on the other guy's life. So they proceed to mess with these guys' lives like puppets. It happens. They lost a bet, but Eddie Murphy finds out, so they decide to exact revenge. And the only way that they know how, and that's by manipulating the stock market. So Trading Places, what did I remember? I didn't get a chance to really watch it. I know you did, Tim.
I did.
But let's see what I can remember from that movie. Besides, oh, what's that one saying he says in the car? What it is, it's like, what it is, or no. When they first meet, when Eddie Murphy first meets Statler and Waldorf, they could pick him up off the street. Man, what did he say? Oh, Morte. Anyway.
Morte. What's up, Morte?
Yeah. So he's, and it's funny because he goes from super street guy to like I'm smooth talking, you know, Obama guy, in like the whole movie. And
in the course of like 2 days, he immediately picks up on the ins and outs of the like futures trading business.
Yes, because that's what the people are doing, is they're hustling. So any good hustler will know. How
it's implied that trading futures is just a fancied up street hustle, which I don't entirely disagree.
I mean, I'm sure nowadays it's done with more computer stuff.
I don't think they could pull off their little orange juice futures plot twist in this day and age. You can't have people running around with a suitcase full of documents that already be broadcast across the world. How do you not know what the crop is, how the crops are doing in Florida? Even then, for that matter, how could you not call Florida and be like, how's the weather?
Well, that's like, in this day and age, you can never do that. And that's two things that the movies do share, is that they strictly are a period piece. Like, he gets on a fucking train to deliver the news. That's how old this movie is, and it was almost only 30 years ago. So, it's like, oh, man. Yeah, if you wanted to find out about like the weather in Florida, you just go to weather.com or you turn on the Weather Channel and listen to some smooth jazz or Pink Floyd while you do it.
Meanwhile, even then, though, it was 1983. They could have kept up with the weather. Maybe I've had that question since I've seen Trading Places. I'm just like, how could you not know if like it was a good year for oranges or not? If you're really that interested in that business, you would know what the weather was like in California and Florida and wherever else they grow. It's nitpick.
Speaking of large, juicy fruits, Jamie Lee Curtis is in this movie, too.
She is in this movie.
And I think it's the only time in her movie history that she is topless.
I don't know about that.
I'm going to stand by it. People are welcome to tweet at Gonzo Guys to let me know if I'm wrong.
I feel like perhaps there's at least one other, if not an additional beyond that. Her early career, I think she was a little more freewheeling.
Freeballing.
Yeah, to an extent.
And she was a hooker that turned into, it's the angelic hooker. That's the other thing. She was the nice hooker. She wasn't the one that stole your money or called your wife on you or anything. She was.
She didn't roll the drunk guy to take his money,
Yeah. Yeah.
She had an investment account apparently, and she was, you know, pretty sharp, and so she didn't have a pimp, and she had T-bills that were earning 40%, according to what I just saw, and so she had it all together, and she figured she'd only have to be, you know, basically hooking for 3 more years.
Yeah, because most hookers are, you know, just one step away from millionaire stardom and retirement.
It's boggling that more people just don't do it. I mean, it's that easy.
No, man. So anyway, obviously, when Dan Aykroyd is the guy that's the man. And Dan Aykroyd plays the stuffy, nerdy guys really well. I think it's because he believes in UFOs, and he's a shitty blues singer. But he is
a stuffy, nerdy guy. So
yeah. So
to an extent.
So of course, if they needed somebody that's a little bit of a little bit of fong, they queued up Dan Aykroyd, and he took that gravy train in this movie and Dr. Detroit actually, and. So they plant some stuff. They get him fired. He gets thrown out. All of his stuff gets thrown out, and then he gets driven to crime. I think the thing about this movie is the best thing that I remember about the movie is like when he tries to frame Eddie Murphy, and he gets busted trying to do it, and they kick him out. And he had all his food like in his Santa suit. And he's just eating this big old fish and his Santa beard at the same time on a bus, just looking all grizzled. That's probably one of the things they take away from that movie the most. That's pretty hilarious.
He gets trashed and he takes the smoked salmon out of like his inside pocket and just starts gnawing on it on the bus.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. What's the kicker with that? And I think my favorite part of that movie, and I've had like this part for a long time, is when they finally go to pull the kind of the long con on the Duke brothers. They are on the train, and Eddie Murphy's supposed to be this foreign exchange student, and the butler, who's kind of in it with him and Dan Aykroyd, comes in as this kind of drunk priest, and he sits down next to Eddie Murphy, and Eddie Murphy's like, "Would you like some beef jerky?" and the guy says. He's like, "Oh no, it gives me the wind something awful," "It gives me the wind something awful," and Eddie Murphy just goes, "Oh," and that's the end of the scene. It's great. The reaction just like, oh,
brother. Yeah, and there's another similarity too, because there's that Indian dude in Dr. Detroit as well.
Oh, and you know, and then the. The other thing I do, I mean, the Trading Places obviously just went to the well on is, it seems to always be funny when someone is inadvertently raped by a gorilla.
Especially when it's Jim Belushi.
No, it wasn't Jim Belushi. They took his suit. They paid him for his gorilla suit, and they put it on the.
Oh, Mr. yeah. Beaks. The guy who was ended up being the principal in The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, they put on. I almost feel like I should know that. Man, what's that guy's name?
Oh, guess what? I have IMDb up.
But not only did they put him in the grill suit, they duct taped his mouth shut. And I think they taped his hands together or something. But anyway, they tossed him in the cage with the gorilla, and nobody seems the two baggage guys don't seem to notice because they're tanked and. One of whom, of course, is a current senator, or previous was a senator in Wisconsin.
It's Paul Gleason is his name. He's Clarence.
Paul Gleason, yes. That's him. Yeah, there was quite a few people in this movie. Al Franken was in it.
Frank Oz was in it.
Frank Oz, he's the cop, and you can hear, his natural voice pretty much sounds like Fozzie the Bear.
Exactly.
It's a good movie. I enjoyed watching. I still have the little nitpick over. I'm like, how the hell do you not know what's going on with oranges? That's called reading weather. If you're that into it, anyway. But you know, you got some gorilla sex mixed in there. Ha ha. And they're actually shipping that poor guy to Africa at the end of the movie with the gorilla in the cage.
That's pretty brutal.
That's kind of rough. I mean, he was a dick, but the weird thing was watching this and then watching, and we'll get into Dr. Detroit in more detail. This one involved Dan Aykroyd kind of being a button up person who then learns to loosen up and pull off a big scam.
Yeah.
And Dr. Detroit, he's a buttoned up person who learns to loosen up, pull off a big scam, both involving hookers.
Yes. Yeah. And one just happens to be more well known than the other. The Duke brothers, who I affectionately refer to as Statler and Waldorf, because that's exactly who they are, except they're Wall Street people. What was the movie that they made like a reference in?
That was coming. It was an Eddie Murphy movie. It's Coming to America, and he's a king, and he's over in like Brooklyn, where it's all beat up and torn down. Like, and he goes past a box, and the two of them are in the box.
And then he like dumps some money on them or something, because I don't need this anymore. And then they gave it to him, and they're like, "We're back."
Yep, that's them. It's Don Amici and Ralph Bellamy. That's the two.
Has there been anything like that? I'm sure in other movies. Like, do you know if the guys who wrote or did
Coming to America,
Trading Places?
I think they were both John Landis movies. But
is that the connection?
I think that might be the connection, or
maybe Eddie Murphy. Yeah, yeah, it's John Landis.
If they're both John Landis, then that's your connection. So, that is a classic John Landis thing to call back to some other movies. There's a little, I don't think he did, I don't know if John Landis did Ferris Bueller's Day Off or not, I don't think he did. They do a little bit of, there's some callbacks in Ferris Bueller's Day Off too to other movies.
That's really cool. Hey, are you jamming out to some music in the background over there?
No, it's the TV from the other room that is coming through the wall.
Nice. All right.
So we get the soundtrack for this one.
Awesome. It's pretty rocking. Is that a...
Actually, I get back. It may not be a TV. It might be an iPad or a
Carrie. I thought that was Carrie Underwood for a second.
Oh, you know what it is? I bet it's that TV show.
Nice.
That Nashville TV show.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Wow, that's weird that it picks it up. I can barely tell it's out there, and you're picking it up clear as day, which is weird.
That's because I also drove up, and I'm actually in the other room right now.
This call's coming from inside your house.
Yeah, so I'm making a well, that's I was trying to make a good segue, and I completely was terrible at it. No, like,
hey, let me see if I can mitigate that.
Oh, that's fine. I'll entertain the podcast listeners. So, has anybody else out there like heard of characters being written into other movies where they may or may not have any direct reference to it? Tarantino is notorious for this. Like, Tarantino, pretty much it's like the Tarantino universe, right?
I've come in on something involving Tarantino. I've closed up the secondary studio.
Oh, that's fine. To give the singers 10 bucks and tell them to take a break.
Yep.
So the characters in other movies, like in Tarantino, right?
Yeah.
Has there been any other kind of references to that? I think you said something about that.
I know that he, in a lot of his movies, they use red apple cigarettes.
Yeah.
And that seems to make the crossover. I'm sure he's got some subtle stuff built in with the way he is.
I wonder what other characters have crossed over in different movies.
I'm not entirely sure, but I kind of feel like in some small way, there's some kind of, besides the actor Ralph Bellamy, who is in Trading Places, but he's also in a another movie that I watch sometimes called Disorderlies.
Oh, that's a good movie.
Bad Boys. And I don't know if there was a crossover in it or, you know.
Stick it. Okay, that's...
There we go, look at that.
Right, that's my human beatbox.
But he was in that movie, and he also played a rich white guy in that, shockingly. But...
Yeah, Yeah, so I don't know. There's not that very... that doesn't happen very often, so it was nice to get a little callback to that. Besides that, I don't have anything else really to say about Trading Places.
No, I think enough people have probably seen that. We don't have to rehash it, you know. But Dr. Detroit, I think my cousins watched that quite a bit because I know they've referenced it before, and I used to not get the references. And they grew up outside Chicago, so they
have that makes sense then.
They have a lot of affinity for like the Blues Brothers.
Anything in Chicago, right? It's like it really is New York's little brother.
Yeah, of course it is.
Because LA people just don't care. But like Chicago, I think they have a chip on their shoulder about more than Boston. Because Boston, yeah, they're just whatever. That's just for sports. But really, it's like Chicago is the New York of the Midwest. So.
Now the thing with Dr. Detroit, and I won't, before we get into the plot, I'll give it some credit for the music they use.
That was like the first note that I had. That I was like, wow, they started out
this, movie this, that opens
Devo. They started out with a Devo song. As soon as that started out, I'm like, all right, I'm glad we picked this movie.
Well, really, I could have just watched the opening with him walking around to the song, and that'd probably been good enough.
If I ever have to mow another lawn, I'm going to listen to this while I do it.
I kind of want this. This is what should play in my head all the time when I'm going anywhere.
Yeah, I know. This is
my new traveling song in my head.
This is my Homer Simpson drifting song, where I just go into my happy place and it's this. Oh yeah.
There we go.
How can that not get you up for this movie?
Well, I immediately had. I was like, "All right, this movie's gonna be good."
I know, right? It's like sometimes you just need the right. You need the right song.
And I must have seen it because I very much remember the voice of Dr. Detroit. How is that a tough pimp voice? Is my
well, I okay. So the movie starts out right, and Dan Aykroyd is nerding up, doing speed walking of all things, wearing glasses that have reverse view mirrors on it. So
we gotta establish he is a super nerd,
and he's a professor, and it, what is it, Morgantown or whatever?
Morgan College, I believe. Which I'm assuming is a fictitious school in Chicago. And he's a professor of comparative literature.
Yes, comparative literature. So how does this book relate to the other? But, I mean, you see that seeped in during the movie. So he walks around, and then all of a sudden, Howard Hessman and his bitches, the very beautiful Fran Drescher, which she was gorgeous back then.
Donna Dixon was...
who actually ended up marrying Dan Aykroyd. Lydia Lay, and then Lynn Whitfield. So
yes, Lynn Whitfield.
They pretty much had every ethnicity except for Latino covered, which is a little disappointing. But that's fine. I mean, there's plenty of flavors to go around, I guess.
Well, Howard Hessman can only afford the four people.
So. Ah, there you go.
That's what I'll give it. I'll go with that.
It's your basic fun dip variety pack.
And this is, I'm missed something since I didn't grow up near Chicago, but apparently a huge majority of the pimps in that town are upper mid-class white people.
Apparently. we'll get to her in a second. Grandma. Yeah. So they're like laughing at this guy. And then they see him again. And they're like, oh, he's got a nice butt and all this other stuff. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And they meet him again, and then they establish the issue, which Howard Hessman's a pimp, but he's not the strong-handed kind. He's more of the Weasley kind.
Well, and then he's like supposed to be partners with this mom woman who apparently runs the town, and he owes her $60,000, but then she's upped it to $80,000 for penalties, and she's like, just give me all this stuff and you'll be all right. And for being like a hardcore, she's like, talks about breaking his kneecaps and killing him and stuff, but every time somebody like tries to talk her out of it, she's just like, okay, I'm listening.
Okay.
She's like, she'll be like, all right, I'll talk. It's like, but you just threatened to break his kneecaps.
Just do it.
I feel like you'd be more realistic pimp if you did part him.
I mean, just do it, lady.
And her two little, she runs a limo service as cover. Mom's limo service, and she has goons that wear limo driver suits.
Look like the Bashams from wrestling.
Those are her two main goons. They get red limo driver jackets, and then she has assistant goons who wear the typical chauffeur outfit. Yes.
So he's like, he makes up some shit a la Usual Suspects, which I think Usual Suspects ripped off this. But he just pulls shit out of the air by looking at stuff at the wall. Really. So he talks about this guy from Detroit called Dr. Detroit, who's a badass, who's muscling in, and it took his money, and that's why he doesn't have any money. And, oh, God. And then his limo driver buddy, T.K. Carter, who plays Diablo Washington, which is pretty much the most racist, stereotypical black guy. I mean, it's brutal that black guy's got parts like that. Back,
and that's like 83, and they were getting parts.
It was
like that.
Completely that's... just. I mean, it was super stereotypical. I mean, literally, he was.
What's still the decent part? She seemed to be, you know.
Yeah.
Like a woman of her own. Granted, she worked for Howard Hessman, but all his ladies all seem to be very self sufficient.
That's the other thing. It's like they're all very smart and intelligent and.
So why exactly are they... I guess maybe he's supposed to be on, like, an escort service. Maybe, like, a high-end escort service or something.
But
it seemed like they're supposed to be trashier than they were.
But the driver guy is like, motherfucker this, fucking that, get on with your Aikido self this. And it was like, you gotta be kidding me, man. This is just way too stereotypical. He did a good job, though, because, you know, that scene where, you know... So he basically tells Howard Hessman tells mom that that Dr. Detroit's got my money, I don't. And then the next thing you know, they're at some Indian restaurant where Dan Aykroyd's at, and they like Howard Hessman picks up on this guy as like a nerd and a total sucker. So he sets him up by pretty much taking him out on the night of his life.
Gives him some ladies, gives him some drugs.
Gets drunk.
They imply that he has slept with some of these women. They don't really say he has.
Oh, dude, they totally, later on in the movie, they do. Because they call him for help while he's doing important, like, begging for money for the college stuff.
Oh, yeah, and they talk about birthmarks
and
whatnot.
Yeah, so you know that's what's going on. That's the thing that kind of, it doesn't bother me. I'm sure...
It doesn't bother me, but the scene leading up to it is kind of like, oh, well, I'm just gonna, oh, I'm with these ladies, and it's
like,
we'll like
all of a sudden, it's like all of a sudden he's like, they bought dinner with me, now I'm gonna go on a drug filled, sex filled adventure for the night that's gonna change my life forever.
Well, he immediately smokes dope, he takes pills they give him, he's just going to town. And I don't know if you're looking for a little trivia piece, Howard Hessman has quite the coke nail.
Just like Leia, Princess Leia.
Carrie Fisher.
There's a scene. There's a scene in Star Wars where you could see her coke nail big time.
Now, God, I am now going to be looking for it. And another piece of my childhood dies.
It's wilting up and dies like everything else on this planet. Happy Wednesday.
Bad, and that Carrie Fisher turned into just a raging alcoholic with mental problems.
Which is pretty much what happened to Dan Aykroyd in this movie, except he had some kind of hero complex.
He's big on the whole chivalry and the knights and Don Quixote and...
Yeah, so, like, he, like, ultimately claims this is the greatest night in his life ever. and he's like, he gets duped. Howard Hessman does a Yo Mama joke at the Diablo Washington, which gets him pissed off and beats him up. So now he's got a beat up face, goes back to mom, and he's like, I can arrange a meeting, you have to talk to him or whatever, but I'm getting out of town. So Howard Hessman totally skips town. He's like, fuck this, I can't do it. So he leaves, and clean and dry too.
he skips down pretty easily, and then Dan Aykroyd, for whatever reason, his character seems really willing to just kind of go along with.
Yeah, things. So like,
oh man, I gotta get back to school. I gotta do this thing for my dad, and they're like, no, you gotta help us. Well, okay.
His dad, who was in Blazing Saddles, the actor was in Blazing Saddles. He was one of the townspeople Saddles, so which is nice. I enjoyed that thoroughly. Which I'm hearing more and more nowadays. I'm hearing more and more nowadays, either people my age or younger that are like, what is Blazing Saddles? I don't know what that is. And that kills me on the inside quietly.
Well, you know, and Mongo just died.
Mongo did die. So we're having a Mongo tribute tonight.
Well, it's a Mongo tribute. And then just in general, this movie, I think I'm pretty sure that everyone in this movie, like, is willing to be convinced way too easily. Mom always is like threatening that she walks in with her goons. She's going to beat you up. And she's like, no, you got to listen to me. This guy's really tough. Okay, I'm listening. And then you got Dan Aykroyd, and they're like, we need you to be Dr. Detroit. I can't do that. Please? Okay.
Well, Mom busts in, and then he has to be all productive. It's like he secretly desired to be a hero, and the only way to do it was through alcohol and drugs and prostitution.
And a bizarre-ass character that he decides to come up with to be a super...
And you know what it is? He gets lost into reading those literature books about heroes, and I think he dreams of being a hero. And I think that's why he keeps referencing Thomas Edison for some retarded reason, and like some other like authors and stuff, because it's like I think he deep down really wanted to be a hero, and this was the only way he could do it. Which you could tell by the incidental music, because all like inspiring horn based kind of like da 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 da.
And he seemed to be able to ad-lib without much trouble. He came up with good, I wouldn't say good lies, but lies apparently they're good enough for Mom to believe. And...
Yes, Mother.
Which one of you is Mom? Punctuality is a virtue, my good madam. Let's chew the fat.
Oh man, this is Mom. It's like, who the fuck sounds like that? Nobody does.
I can tell you who sounds a little bit like
who's that.
Your Conehead.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yay, way to stretch out that acting prowess there, Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, that's his range. There's Conehead. Now it's different. Beldar's got a different voice than Dr. Detroit, but it's not that far off.
So he becomes Dr. Detroit because he finally finds out that there's prostitutes and he's okay with it because he boffed him already. And now he's got to juggle between the stiffy, uppity crust life and the low life, prostitution stuff, which. I don't think it's as shocking nowadays as it might have been in the 80s. I think maybe prostitution back in the early 80s was probably a bigger deal than what it is, like, today.
It seems, well, I think...
It's a little bit more glamorized, I guess.
It sounds a little more pompous these days, but I do believe the... I don't know, for those people who watch South Park, the bar has been lowered a bit in today's culture.
That's true. And, I don't think that faces anything.
It's a lot more to shock, unless some magnificent director were to come raise the bar.
So Dan Aykroyd gets down with his Aikido self, and he arranges a meeting. They meet, and Mom, the butch old lady of the 80s, remember in the 80s? Sorry, I didn't mean to say that phrase, but do you remember when there's a lot of like, especially comedies and even raunchy comedies, where there's always that old or somewhat old fat butch lady that seemed to be like an antagonist?
I am exactly thinking of Porky's,
sir.
And I do believe other movies then took that little stereotype and ran with it a little bit. There's always some kind of rough looking woman or a big heavy woman, old woman who's either like the disciplinarian person, or she was some kind of
she seemed kind of dopey too, like she was like the Elmer Fudd of butch old ladies.
Well, and then she's supposed to be running this hardcore crew of like prostitutes mm-hmm. and run prostitution in the city. She's swayed way too easy, and then she doesn't seem to like know what's going on.
She's very gullible for a tough lady. And they meet Dr. Detroit while Dr. Detroit's running around trying to. This guy's coming in giving an endowment check, so they need to kiss his ass because that's education, folks. And he's running around, and the guy's getting into weird situations, and it's always awkward. And his dad's freaking out because like, oh, he's not going to give us the money for the college, because that's what people have to do is beg for money for endowments for universities. And so he's doing that, trying to manage this pimp business he all of a sudden has inherited. And they meet mom in this graveyard, which I guess it moved to like a junkyard.
An auto graveyard.
And you're right, Tim. Like, mom's like, I show up my henchmen and all my other henchmen who have loaded semi-automatic weapons, but somehow Dr. Detroit and the four prostitutes and the very hipster Diablo Washington driver guy somehow managed to escape. And it's just like, wow. So they get away, and it's like she gets hurt and gone, and you know you figure she's taken care of. So that's great. So now the other big problem is getting that check and still being like the pimp, because now he's getting talked into going to the players' ball.
That's right, and they're able to just. The prostitutes, I guess, for lack of a better term, they seem to be able to like arrange all kinds of stuff and get things squared away. So I don't even know what
managed to turn themselves into a professional catering business. And like,
oh, I can do that all the time. I was like, well, then why aren't you a caterer?
Yeah, why are you on your back versus being a caterer?
I mean, they sound like the kind of gals who would run into the Jamie Lee Curtis character in Trading Places.
They're more like Charlie's Angels. And you're right. That's the thing about both these movies is like they're both enterprising, young, smart prostitutes, which it's not reality.
There's a problem in there somewhere.
I'm not speaking from experience. I just know some things are getting glamorized, whereas they probably aren't as realistic as they should be. So,
no, I would say that for that time frame, that's what you had to do with prostitutes in movies, which you had to make it be like they're kind of cheery and happy with their lives.
Yeah.
And it's like one big party, except for that one little negative thing about your life.
Oh, man.
So somehow...
Like, they have one big dinner for this endowment check, and it just happens to be in the same fucking hotel as the player's ball.
And the thing that kind of was, they just tossed it in there, was, like, the guy with the check.
Yeah.
The big endowment guy, he's going to come give him a chunk of money to save the school. Dan Aykroyd's supposed to pick him up, but of course he's got to do some Dr. Detroit work. And so he's late to the train station, and the guy thinks he's getting a cab. And I guess the guy just gets picked up by two hoodlums and they rob him or whatever. Somehow he manages this. They take his clothes, but they don't take the briefcase.
That has the check in there.
That has the $1 million check in it. And on top of that, it's like, could they just have Dan Aykroyd just not pick him up at the train station and like he takes a cab to the house? Because it really didn't matter that he got robbed at the train station. They kind of want you to think like he's going to get really mad and he won't give him the money. But
it's like, oh, suspense.
But the fact that it was never in play. There was never any risk of that. So there was no need to have him get mugged by the weird guys in the guy. He's like, are you a taxi? No, I'm a man.
I'm a big boy. I made duty. It's like, come on.
But that just seemed a little unnecessary. But at the same time, if you're going to do that, then he should have lost the check and then you could have taken the movie in a different direction. Because he gets out of the police car and he's like, well, I managed to hang on to the suitcase. And it's like, all right, well, they took your clothes off. How did you manage to convince them to let you keep a suitcase? It's nitpicky, like in Trading Places, about how you not know what the weather's doing in orange-growing states. But
fuck it, movies.
Anyway, you know, it's a comedy. Shut up, stop asking questions.
Yeah, so Dan Aykroyd manages to now get in a sitcom. It's a sitcom situation It's situational comedy, actually. And he now has to drive. He now has to go back and forth between these events, dressed as regular Dan Aykroyd, or regular stuffy professor guy, and then go back to the other one and be Dr. Detroit.
Yeah, that would. Yeah, he goes back to being Dr. Detroit at the big banquet. Mom shows up. He runs into her while he's changing.
Well, no, you know who shows up? It's motherfucking James Brown that shows up. How the hell did that guy get in that movie?
Because Dan Aykroyd wanted him in that movie.
Yes, I don't know, but I was like, holy shit, I forgot he was in this movie.
And he gets a full musical number.
He gets a get up off of that thing, Dr. Detroit style theme. So they sing, so James Brown, who's the hardest coke man in the business, sings get up off of that thing, but changes the words around to Dr. Detroit and sings it for Dr. Detroit.
Well, and he gets a nice, lovely introduction from Dr. Detroit, who Dan, whether he's either he's his persona of Dr. Detroit or whether it is the stuffy English professor, he gives him a professional introduction on the microphone.
And
like, the hardest working man in showbiz, and it's like a perfect introduction. It's like, he just does it in this voice, and that's it.
He's like, yeah, I'll see you later. Later, bitches.
The hardest working man in showbiz.
Yeah, I'll see you later, bitches.
Why does he have to be a chiropractor? I've got
it's because he's got this goofy hand thing that's like janky.
And I carry a doctor's bag, and I get to adjust people's spines.
Oh, he has obviously had that ready, locked and loaded. He was just waiting.
I think that's his default. Okay, just be a weird character.
Okay. Isn't that Dr. Detroit? No, it's somebody else.
No. So I think with this film, one thing has been established is that we have the first ever recorded flash mob. It was 80s flash mob. Because somehow, once they started singing that song, everybody knew how to dance together.
Doctor.
But it's like they did a dance number off of that, and they did the classic Dan Aykroyd running in place, and that's actually dancing dance move. And they're sliding back and forth.
They were all doing it in the
ballroom. They're all doing it in the ballroom because, you know, it's a flash mob. That's what it is. And to be honest, if I was going to be in a flash mob, I certainly wouldn't be in with hookers. Maybe they flash a little bit of something else up.
And I do wonder why they chose the player's ball, because that is a real thing.
Oh, it's real. I just ask Ice-T.
It's very real. It doesn't look a lot like that, though.
Oh, man. So, So what happened was... he runs into mom in the kitchen, because that's where mom heads first, apparently.
She goes to go right to the back kitchen between the two ballrooms.
It's like, is there like a henchman, is there like a hoodlum entrance only sign in that restaurant?
Apparently it's the kitchen.
You're going to run into Brad Pitt when he's like, fuck, peeing in soup or something?
That's
Fight Club reference, dude.
Oh, my goodness. I should know that. Everybody's running around the back kitchen.
So naturally what they do is they have a sword fight.
Of course.
Because swords in the kitchen and everything.
Because that's where hotels keep... Well, most hotels, it's a known fact, keep their swords in the back kitchen.
You know, room service and jousting service. It's like...
And of course they... I think when they're crossing him in the kitchen, she realized... That's when she puts together this guy. Despite the fact he's obviously the same guy.
Yes, definitely a Clark Kent Superman situation.
Well, I couldn't tell because of the voice.
Yes, the voice threw me off. It's like Christian Bale.
This isn't a car.
It's like, oh, that's not very funny.
It's not a car.
This is a car.
How'd you do that? Nobody's here, dude. You don't have to do the voice.
You happen to have a secret.
Not to a sword.
Have you seen Dr. Detroit? It's pretty good.
Excuse me for a moment. I'm going to make a salt rinse.
So, don't give any cries.
Oh, man.
Sorry, I left my scarf at home.
Did you ever think Dr. Detroit and training places were kind of similar?
No, Batman.
could be a Batman villain.
He is kind of the Joker.
He could be. He definitely would have fit right in on the campy 60s TV show.
Totally. So Mom and Dr. Trent have a fight. Guess what? In Blazing Saddles fashion, it spills into another function. They come to discover, Dr. Troy and Stuffy Professor Guy's the same guy. Wah, wah.
And, of course, the event they go into is his parents' event for the school, and she knocks his wig off with the sword, and everything is revealed. He gets her cornered, and she's like, just kill me, which is kind of dark. And then he's like, no, just take her away, and then, like, the
Pimps.
Other...
Pimp. Yeah, who most certainly will end up killing her.
They kind of leave that open.
Yeah.
He's like, no, just take her away. And then he talks about how he's not going to keep doing that and how he was, just doing it temporarily to defend the honor of all these.
Yes, because pimps and hoes only do it temporarily anyway.
Well, and they all operate on the honor system. The chivalry system and honor system are key components of the pimp hooker relationship.
Yeah.
And then of course he gives a perfectly timed, well reasoned speech
about being a literary hero and being just and chivalrous and all this other fun stuff. So what happens? Of course, stuffy white people go to party at the players' ball.
And if the school gets the money and everybody's happy.
Yeah.
His mom, who seems very often throughout the movie to be very inquisitive too, of the.
She's very curious about the whole thing.
The player's life, apparently. Yeah.
Whereas the dude, the guy, minus the dream sequence with Howard Essman, the guy is pretty, is stuffy of all stuffy.
He did just want the money for the school, so once he got that, he seemed to be loosened
like
up.
Good, like any good educator.
Yeah.
And you guys might be wondering what authority that we're speaking of on this. We have brushes up against education. We know this.
That you do. There is money banking that goes on.
Yes. So that's the end of the movie, or is it? Because look out!
Oh God, I forgot about
that. That's right. Because I'm surprised we haven't seen it yet.
Dr. Detroit 2, Wrath of Mom.
Wah, wah, wah. Yes, just when you couldn't finish the movie off on a high note, you had to kill it all with a retarded pun.
It's the Wrath of Mom.
Instead of Tom, because of Star Trek and stuff.
Did you get it?
I get it. I wish I never got it in the first place.
And you know what? The weird thing is they never made that movie.
I wonder why. Looking at the Wikipedia page, I guess Fran Drescher bitched about it. Apparently the budget was $8 million and it only netted $10 million in the theater.
I'm pretty sure this was a total bomb at the movie
theater. When did this come out? Let's do a little... May 6th is when this guy came out, right?
It was a summer release.
Right? So...
Right before the summer, but it was supposed to make some bank by coming out in May.
Yes. Now, June 8th, not like a month later, right?
Yeah.
That's when Trading Places came out.
So Dan Aykroyd had two movies in the theater conceivably. Now, he... Dr. Detroit, wait a second. I my brain just caught up with something. It cost $8 million? Good God. Really?
Well, this is 1983 money, though.
That makes it worse.
Well, apparently...
$8 million doesn't go as far as it used to. I don't know that by any personal experience, but I just would assume. Good.
But
$8 million for Dr.
Detroit? I don't know what the budget for Trading Places was, but I can tell you that Trading Places made $90 million.
As in, Trading Places did well.
Do you think Dr. Detroit suffered because Trading? I mean, if you're a month before a movie comes out, right? You know you got to be doing some kind of advertising, right?
Well, as soon as Dr. Detroit hit the theaters, they probably started pumping in ads for...
So I'm sure people were, like, looking at Trading Places and Dr. Detroit being all like...
Which one?
Dan Aykroyd, one guy I know. Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, two guys I know. I'm going to wait for this one.
Or, and I would think even then, I wonder if they tried to pull any, fast, tricks. Like, because in, 1983, movie theater's still your place you're going to go for your movies. You're not going to have the home entertainment section like you do a few years later. So they could have comboed them at some theaters and said, come see a Dan Aykroyd double feature and then try to make up some of their money.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's just, but theaters kind of sucked back then, from what little of I know of it.
But yeah, but that was your only option. So I figured maybe drive-ins and things would combo the two of them. But apparently it wasn't enough to save Dr. Detroit.
Apparently. It's just a shame.
But $8 million?
It's a shame, though, because I mean, that's one of the movies I enjoyed thoroughly in my childhood. And you know what it is? I think it was, I mean, as a kid, now when I watched it just this last week, it's like, okay, it's a little corny. It's a little over the top.
It's a little cornball.
But as a kid watching it and not really fully understanding what prostitution was, seeing Dan Aykroyd banter about like some kind of chivalrous hero was really like inspiring as a kid. I mean,
it kind of, I'm trying to think about this. Dan Aykroyd's made some interesting movie choices, and I'm thinking like there's this, there's My Stepmother is an Alien. I'm trying to think. There's been some other, and for whatever reason, I don't know why this movie reminded me of Howard the Duck.
Oh, man.
But it did.
I'm sorry.
I don't know why it makes that connection in my brain. I don't know if it's the look or what, but Howard the Duck's its own whole deal. That's a whole different show.
It is completely different.
That you can tag that one to George Lucas.
And hey, that had a comic book too.
That's true. Comic book's way better.
Yeah, popular one. So Dr. Detroit. I liked it. I thought it was a good movie. Even like watching it, I mean, there's some corny stuff in there. It's definitely not as funny as Trading Places. I didn't laugh out loud as much, but I still have a warm spot in my heart. And you know, I think it's because of Fran Drescher of all things. She is just absolutely gorgeous, and she's not like annoying voice Fran Drescher.
No, that was definitely Fran Drescher in her prime. She was pretty
stacked. I mean, she was just gorgeous. Out of all the ladies, I mean, Donna Dixon was kind of hot, but
she looked a little weird, I thought.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Fran Drescher was, whew.
No, yeah, she was by far the best one in that film. And I liked it. The Devo thing, the first 5 minutes was enough.
I know, right? It's just the soundtrack. That's all you really needed.
And there's some other, they use some good other, there's some good, there's a pretty decent soundtrack throughout Dr. Detroit.
Well, for the ones where Dan Aykroyd doesn't sing it, because in the soundtrack, Dan Aykroyd does sing some songs in this.
Oh, no.
I don't know if they're like actual songs. I'd love to get this whole soundtrack. I saw something on eBay for, like, the vinyl record, but it was, like, $30. I'm like, nah, I'm not going to get it that much. But, like, T.K. Carter, the guy who plays the driver in Dan Aykroyd, sing a song on the soundtrack. And then the lady who's, like, I don't know who Patty Brooks is, but she must be some kind of session lady. She sings the songs by herself, and then she sings it with Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, boy.
But there's two. There's
start to figure out what this movie didn't
yeah,
do so
there's
well.
Two Devo songs, and then there's like two James Brown songs on the soundtrack as well. I think it'd be really interesting to get the soundtrack as a whole.
The overall music that's not performed by anybody in the movie.
The incidental music.
The actual music is pretty good.
Yeah.
The stuff apparently is on the soundtrack sounds suspect.
But I tell you what, man, that Devo song at the beginning is a home run.
That is,
just the first couple minutes, it really got me excited.
I was trying to figure out what the noise was, and the little Universal thing popped up on the screen, and it's MCA Universal or whatever's popping up, and I hear this weird noise, and I'm like, oh, that kind of sounds like a Devo song.
And then it ended up being a Devo song.
It's like, oh, it's a Devo song.
Pleasant surprise. Yeah. I do enjoy watching the Devo.
Let's do the fat.
Yeah, see, now. I keep going into that old-timey gangster place.
It's just Jimmy. It basically, it's Jimmy. It's James Gang.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a pimp now. Yeah, copper. Yeah.
See? Look here, see? No, I don't know if that's Jim Cagney, it's somebody else, but it doesn't matter.
Go to the Facebook page at Gonzo Guys and practice, because we're wrong.
Because we don't know who it is. I think, you know, I'm looking at something here. I think I'm going to have to pop up the... I'm going to throw up a link to the Devo video for this. There's actually a music video
I think that's the song we're going to close out with. Although I'm not done talking yet, because...
No. We'll close. I think the Devo song would be a good song too.
Because it'll be a good song to do that and other things too.
Yeah, there's something else that we should. The last song. Make sure you listen to it.
So I would recommend this movie if only once. Is a good. It's a period piece of the early 80s. I would say it's worth watching.
Yeah, and the movie, Dr. Detroit might be a little corny and goofball, but Trading Places is a generally funny movie. Dr. Detroit's funny for different reasons. Oh, yeah,
Trading Places, if you haven't seen it, I mean, go out and see it now.
That's the better movie, but there's Dr. Detroit is so freaking weird.
And obscure, and that's what makes it gonzo.
That's why it's good, and they're both good nostalgia pieces, if you grew up at all.
Yeah. Clifford Scridlow, that's his name.
Clifford Scridlow. Professor Scridlow. Oh, Lord. Well, I'll do it to Detroit. Or...
So, yeah, and there are a lot, and those two movies are very much the same. Like, there's the intelligent hookers, there's the stuffy Dan Aykroyd turning crazy.
Yep.
There's, well, there's no butch lady in Trading Places.
No, you can tell it's
there's lots of money, like money and affluence.
If you dropped Eddie Murphy, I take it back. He kind of has a black sidekick.
Yeah, that's true.
You're gonna get now. Granted, Eddie Murphy wasn't much. He was more of a co-star than a sidekick, but in both movies, it's Dan Aykroyd and a hit black sidekick.
It's true. And then what else? Oh, yeah, and then Dan Aykroyd falls for one of the well-to-do prostitutes, because...
That's right, he marries Fran Drescher.
Yeah, so that's what's so weird, and that's probably why it was such a tough choice to go see this movie versus Trading Places back in the day, is that it smelled of the same plot, the same kind of...
You could say both movies end with Dan Aykroyd married to the hooker.
And learn to become more of a human being by not being on Wall Street and doing drugs and getting crazy. If there's any messages between those movies, it's that you need to go out and do drugs and marry a hooker and you'll have a more fulfilled life.
Yep. And you can still become fabulously wealthy by screwing over old white.
Looking good, Billy Ray. Feeling good, Lewis.
That boat was like a mile offshore.
How could they fucking hear him?
That was the thing at the end. I'm like, are they supposed to be like right there? Because that boat looks really far away. And it's not like the ocean's quiet.
That boat is amazingly far away.
Looking good, Billy Ray. Oh, looking good too. You're not in the same room.
Looking good too? I can't hear you.
Looking good too, man.
That's the wrong movie, Dan. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah, I can't get enough of that. That's why, like, to this day, I will bust out into the Doctor of Detroit voice every once in a while, because I've seen that a lot as a kid.
It's a forever
this
part of
this is ma'am. Ma'am, yeah,
let's chew the crap.
I'm sorry, I have to drive all the way down here from Detroit. I don't even like going to Cook County. Nah.
Good Lord.
Coming down from Kent County.
Oh, God.
Why? They're all hung up on counties, too. It's like, I would think you came down from Detroit.
What's the counties? This isn't the Kansas City metro area.
I think my brother lives in Kent County, but he doesn't live in Detroit. He lives in a different place.
He should be the new Dr. Detroit. It should be like Slapshot 2, where he takes over and everyone else's kids somehow end up being the same
person. He is a doctor.
Exactly.
All right. Someone's getting a suggestion email.
Yes, a suggestive email, when I say it that way, it can mean a whole other thing.
Suggestive email.
Like, maybe, that's probably... That's what happened to our compadre, and now he's out on some rich island somewhere.
Yep, one fortunate email, and he's, you know, living the good life on the islands.
Feeling good, too. You can run into Dr. Detroit.
Yeah, you don't want to run into Dr. Detroit. He'll just be fine.
I could have used Dr. Detroit a couple years ago.
I am a chiropractor.
Yeah, make a few adjustments. Yeah. But I wonder what if Dr. Detroit was still around these days, I wonder what he would be like. He'd probably be dead.
I'm retired.
Or he got out of the game, and then he lost all his money, and then he had to go work at a fast food joint, and now he's working the drive-up lane. Welcome to Taco Bell. Can I take your order?
I'm pretty sure I actually have been through the restaurant with somebody like that on the other
pretty
side.
Pretty sure all of them sound like Dr. Detroit.
Did you want a Mountain Dew?
Did you want hot or fire sauce with
that? He can only give you one.
Oh, God. I'm all Dr. Detroit. I wanted two fire packets.
Yeah, well, if you want more sauce, it's extra.
Here, let me make an adjustment. Click to your order.
I gave you four already. I can't just give them all to you.
I mean, I have to give them out to everybody. It's going to be new.
Fire sauce isn't free, sir. If you will just give me a quarter per packet, then we can give you as much sauce as you
want. Talk to Detroit, pimp of the packets.
I'm running a business here, sir.
Oh, God. If anything,
you can come through that box and adjust your spine. I can do that.
Yeah, you must watch the safety video first before you're allowed to work in my restaurant.
And you do have to wear a metal gauntlet on your hands.
Yes, it's for the fried pieces of chicken.
You know, you just tread it up by touching it. It's something I
It's more sanitary. This is the practices I have here. Man.
Did I tell you I used to run pimps in Detroit and Chicago?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Detroit.
It's Dr. Detroit.
I thought that was just your first name.
It is. Technically, I'm Dr. Detroit.
Oh, God. Why did I drop out of college?
I was in college at one time, too, when I dropped down. I was a professor, but now I run a Taco Bell that serves fried chicken.
Why?
Because I can.
Oh, so, well, that was, that was, of course, Dr. Detroit Theater. don't let the last couple minutes deter you away from actually watching this movie. It's actually...
I think Dr. Detroit Theater may have to pop
yes,
up from time
exactly.
to time. Like Dr. Detroit reads current yes. events.
Numerous presidential debates, including a rousing retort that made me think of how Mom would struggle in the pincer in the graveyard of the junkyard. Nah.
And surprisingly, I didn't kill her with
oh my
it.
God.
Everybody in this movie is
like
40
feet on the scrap metal.
Even though the movie was rated R, nobody died in this movie.
Although, to break character, there was one little tiny scene of boobs. You had to see it in the dream sequence. Like, the main ladies didn't do it, but if you look closely in the background, there was a boob scene, so.
He did watch some adult films.
Oh, yeah, that too. That is correct. So
that was it.
So, just, like, take all the Dr. Detroit Theater... And just, like, trust us. It's worth watching. I know it kind of sounded like, I don't know, a metal claw screeching on a chalkboard. But I think definitely do not fast forward on Dr. Detroit.
No, it's too weird. It's plenty good. And most people who have seen it, I'm sure, would agree.
But... And there's boobs in it. And there's Dan Aykroyd. And...
Plus, you can walk around talking like that for a while. It's a lot of fun.
And it's a good, you know, I'm sorry that I didn't get a chance to watch it back and back like you did. That would have been a lot of fun.
It makes the similarities jump out quite a bit if you watch them back to back. And Dr. Detroit's great. It's an hour and a half. It doesn't try to do too much. Trading Places runs almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
But it's done pretty well. It probably could have shaved a little bit here and there, but Dr. Detroit's the perfect length for goofy kind of screwball comedy.
Yes.
And a lot of odd things in it. Lots of people you've, a lot of actors you've seen before, I mean, that you've seen later pop up in it. It's
yeah, good. So definitely do not fast forward on this guy.
No, do not fast forward.
And I think that might do it. Do you have anything else?
I think that's our show for this week. Those movies held a lot of sway. I think the we'll give them a little taste of the Devo and possibly a surprise sound in there.
Yeah, well, yes. Yes.
Not necessarily a sound we used before, but perhaps another audio piece that could carry me.
Yes, well, we'll tune in and find out whenever this comes out.
We'll see what happens when that comes together. But the Devo song, definitely you have to get a taste of that in there. So, you know.
But
it's just.
But until then.
Got to watch him operate.
Do not fast forward.
All right, we'll see you again for another episode.
Yeah, later, y'all.
Every now and again, we're going to toss in a little Dr. Detroit theater, I think.
I think it'd be worth it. Until we get there.
I think it'll be a good idea.
Yeah.